Haaretz newspaper wrote about Asaf Gavron that he's probably the best, one of the best writers in Israel. His book, The Hilltop, the book that he's here to talk about, was described in Haaretz newspaper probably as the best political novel to be written in Israel in a long while. In this book, you will hear about, he presents the settlers in a full and complex way. And as the newspaper wrote about him, this was a book that was waiting to be written. I am really astonished to read about Asaf Gavron. Asaf, your biography is just so rich. It is unbelievable. Just to share with the good people here, you are a writer, a novelist, a translator, a musician. You used to be a high-tech worker. You were captain of the Israeli National Writers football team. But I think... Asaf, as a Jerusalemite, I worship you more than anything else as the author of the mythological food column in Kol Ha'ir newspaper in Jerusalem, where you used to write a column about, which was called Eat and Standing Up, about the falafel and shawarma in Israel. But more about Asaf we will hear in a minute. You are here because of your writing skills and the way that you present the complex Israel today in such a beautiful way. Thank you for coming all the way from Israel to be with us here, and it's a pleasure to introduce you.
So please, Asaf, thanks to Daniel Miron, the ambassador of the State of Israel. Asaf, here's the microphone. Welcome to Svět knihy Praha 2018.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Peter, and thank you, Mr. Ambassador, for your words. It's funny to meet someone who read my falafel reviews 20 years ago in a place like this.
Maybe just to add a couple of bio information, also for the listeners of Český rozhlas Vltava, because today's meeting with Asaf Gavron, together with other meetings with Israeli authors, is recorded and is going to be on air next week in Český rozhlas Vltava, for which we are very happy and grateful. So just some more information. Asaf is the author of 7 novels, if I'm not mistaken, and 1 book of short stories. We are readers of just one novel to this moment, The Hilltop, which he's come to present to Prague. The Hilltop that's... apart from being read over the world and in Israel, has won the Bernstein Prize, which I read everywhere is a very prestigious prize. So are you happy as an author to have got such a prize?
Yes, of course I am. You know, when you win a prize, it becomes the most prestigious and the most important prize in Israel. This is what you tell everyone. But it is actually one of the 3 big prizes. There is one that is bigger in the money that it gives, but money is not important. Prestige is more important, right?
Yeah, well, I guess so, is it? Okay, I've prepared a small introduction about the novel in Czech, like a small review, but I don't know now if I should translate it maybe into English directly. So the novel itself tells a saga about a fictional illegal settlement, Malé Chrmeš 3. I hope, well, it's C in English, I guess, in the translation. In the Czech one, it's 3. On the west bank of Jordan. The basic situation is quite absurd because it's just a settlement that shouldn't exist, but it keeps on existing. Maybe get into the book and the literature that Asaf writes, we are going to start with a short part of the novel And we are going to ask first Asaf to write a part in Hebrew, and then I'm going to read the same part in Czech. So please, Asaf.
Okay, so I'll read only one paragraph just so you listen to the sound of Hebrew. I guess most of you would not understand what it means. Rishonim ayu asadot. בימים ההם התגורר עתניאל אסיס במעלה חרמש וגידל להנאתו עז, רוקט ועגבניות שרי בגינת ביתו. העז נועדה לילדים, הרוקט והעגבניות לסלט של רחל אשתו. ראה עתניאל כי טוב ומאס בעבודתו כמנהל חשבונות ומצא שדה קטן בשטח ההתנחלות כדי לפתח בו את גידוליו. אך השדה נשק לכרמים שאין בהם שימשו ליצור יין הבוטיק של אחד התושבים, שמכר אותו למסעדת תפוח הזהב בתל אביב ולמסעדות פאר אחרות. לדבריו, אפילו בעמק הדורדון ובפריז. עיקם היינן פניו וטען שקיבל מהמועצה אישור לנטיית קרמים נוספים בחלקה שמצא עתניאל, כי אדמתה, יחד עם החורף הקר והקיץ ממוזג הלילות, הקנתה לגפנו איכות יוצא דופן, תרואר ייחודי, והעניקה ליין גוף וניחוחות אגוזיים.
Na počátku byla pole. Tenkrát ještě bydlel Otniel Asis v osadě Mále Chermeš a jen tak pro vlastní potěchu choval na dvorku před domkem kozu a pěstoval si na záhonku rukolu a třešňová rajčata. Kozu pořídil dětem, rukolu a rajčátka vysel pro svou ženu Ráchel, aby měla čerstvé do salátu. I viděl Otniel, že je to dobré, a protože ho zaměstnání účetního omrzelo, vyhlédl si pozemek patřící ještě k území osady, kde chtěl zkusit pěstovat zeleninu ve velkém. Jenomže jeho políčko sousedilo s vinohradem jiného osadníka, který ze zdejší révy vyráběl butikové víno a dodával ho na stoly tel avivské restaurace Zlaté jablko a do dalších luxusních podniků. Dokonce tvrdil, že má mezi odběrateli i pár sklípků v údolí francouzské řeky Dordoň a několik restaurací v Paříži. Vinař nad Otnielovými plány ohrnul nos a prohlásil, že má od obecního úřadu povolení vysadit právě na tomhle svahu novou vinici. Zdejší pršť, chladné podnebí v zimě a vlahé letní noci mají totiž mimořádně příznivý vliv na kvalitu hroznů a jedinečný teroár dodává vínu kulaté tělo a květinový buket. Otniel tedy ustoupil a dál vyrážel na toulky po okolí, protože hluboce miloval krajinu země izraelské, stejně jako miloval samotu, modlitbu a chůzi. Poněvadž dal s Bohem práci účetního, mohl si dovolit chodit zarostlý vousem a oblékat se už jen do zemědělských montérek. Šplhal roklinami podél bystřin a vykračoval si po vrcholcích pavorků, až jednoho dne dospěl nad ladem ležící nepříliš kamenitý pahorek, kam nezasahoval olivový háj rolníků ze sousední arabské vesnice Harmíš. I pravil Otniel v srdci svém, zde se budou rozkládat má pole. So that was part of the prologue of the novel, the beginning of the prologue. Here the novel was a nominee for the Litera Prize, the Magnesia Litera Prize category translated prose, translated fiction. Do you like the Czech translation?
I cannot tell myself because I cannot read Czech, but I hear amazing things about the translation, and I take this nomination for the prize as proof that the translation is exceptionally good. So I like it, yeah.
The novel is based in an illegal settlement in the West Bank. It is written with ease. It seems so, although it seems very well crafted from the inside. It's written with humor, with compassion as well, for the characters, which are many. It's written with a great sense of details, I would say, that makes a very vivid picture. Many reviewers said and talked about the novel as a realistic novel. I think it's because of this, because the picture is very vivid. We have a sensation of being there in Mála Charmeš Sea. At the same time, as I said, I think the novel is very smartly built up, crafted, complex. We can see that. I would even say it's a total novel based in a settlement, presenting the whole frame. A total novel, something the Latin American writers, for instance, would be trying all the time, presenting the whole frame of a small world, and sometimes I think the novel gets very spectacular, for instance, in the ending. What was your ambition with the novel Hilltop when you first had the idea of writing it?
Well, I was first, I think my initial interest was to know more about the settlers. It was curiosity. I knew them like maybe many people do, from the headlines, from the political aspect. And as someone who lives in a different place in Tel Aviv, and did not grow up religious and doesn't know a lot about this world, I wanted to get into it and know the people, know the motives. As an Israeli, the settlers, they affect your life, whatever, whether you support them or oppose them, whether you live there or you don't. What they do affects the policy of Israel. It affects the chances for peace. It affects your country's status in the world, or its name in the world. So, and it's actually a very small group of people. It's less than 5% of the population of Israeli Jews. So something about it was, for me, fascinating to learn about. I didn't have this idea of a grand novel at first, or total novel, as you call it. But when I started writing, I realized that I'm writing about more than just this one small group and small place. But actually, I think I'm catching here something bigger about Israel, and I felt like going further, going backwards in time, going further geographically. So there are parts in a kibbutz, in Tel Aviv, in America, but it's all following a kind of an Israeli mindset, I think.
So was there curiosity of somebody who reads a newspaper? Sorry to go back in your answer, but it's that curiosity. I know that you made a research that was also based in visiting for 2 years an illegal settlement. I think it was maybe the same size, so it was a settlement that you built the novel a little bit about. How was this research part of the work? What did you meet there, and were you surprised by something?
I did go for 2 years every week. I went actually all over the West Bank. The West Bank, you ask if I was surprised. One of the first surprises was to realize how much diversity there is within the settlers' world, between different settlements, between the settlers themselves, different reasons that they go there, different ways that they live their lives. There are places that are much more ideological, political, hardcore, even violent. There are places that are less, that are moderate, and they are there for the nice, beautiful landscape and actually relaxed atmosphere, although it sounds strange, but because it, in a sense it's a war zone and there is violence there, but actually it's really, most days of the year, it's really quiet and beautiful and relaxed. So I went all over the place, but as you say, I did end up going especially to this one small settlement that became the inspiration for Ma'ale Chermesh Si. It's called Tkoa Daled. It's Tkoa Di, actually. It's a small settlement not far from Jerusalem, about 15-minute drive from Jerusalem. And first of all, I'll admit, they were the ones who were nicest to me. They had no problem with me coming. There were other places, that didn't want me there.
What does it mean? How did you come? You said, I'm Asaf Gavron, the writer of novels.
Well, yeah.
And I want to write about you?
Yeah, I never lied or tried to kind of be a spy pretending to be a settler. I always said I'm a writer from Tel Aviv. I also look like a writer from Tel Aviv, so it would be
like
difficult.
You don't look like a settler.
Yeah, it would be difficult to claim otherwise, but I also want it to be true, and there are places in the northern part of the West Bank, what is called Samaria, that are much more ideological and much more suspicious of someone like me, and they just told me to go. But as I said, this place, they were curious about me as I was about them, and about me wanting to write, and I always said, yeah, I want to write a book, and can I just hang around a bit? And I ended up going back to there and even getting a kind of permission to use a little cabin that also became an inspiration to the cabin in the book, Gabi's cabin, and actually sit in there and write. So I used to do that.
So you'd look out of the cabin and write, pick up inspiration.
Yes,
pick up things.
It was very hot in the summer, very cold in the winter. The floor of the cabin is actually the rock of the mountain. I mean, the description is in the book. I should also say that the research involved also, I would call this the actual physical research, going out there, seeing the people, talking to them, and seeing the landscape. But there's also a lot of reading, a lot of documentaries, and also as you say, the book became wider in scope, and it deals with olive oil production, and it deals with the bars in Tel Aviv, the nightlife in Tel Aviv, and it deals with finding old coins.
New York as well,
and New York financial world of New York, and the kibbutzim. So, the research, obviously, going out to the settlement wasn't enough. I did a lot of reading and supplementing to that.
Yet I was asking for the research in situ and in terrain because. You know, the novel is presented like the first novel from the West Bank illegal settlement. But now as I listen to you, it is not like, it's not the example of that would describe the whole movement of settlers in the West Bank. It's just one.
It's an example, but I think it's an example that gives an insight to the whole movement. The movement is wide. It's big. It's 500,000 people at the moment. Some of them, most of them, live in cities that are more like suburbs of a big city in the West. And this focuses on the smaller illegal settlements, which are the ones that are founded by the people without paperwork, without provisions from the government or the authorities. It's like more like the Wild West a bit. They go out there and they grab another piece of land and they don't have electricity at first, and they pull the electricity from somewhere, and then the army goes to protect them, so they ask the army for the water, and it's a kind of a process like that. It doesn't represent the whole settlement movement, but it does shows the way things work in Israel. It's a lot also about the bureaucracy of it, about the very clever way that the settlers are doing illegal things, but they manage to get a favor from a guy in this ministerial office, and to get another favor from another guy there, to pave a road in the night when no one sees. It is, in a sense, not only shows the whole settlement movement and how it came to be, and still grows and affects Israel and maybe the world even, but also I think a picture of the machinery that allows this, which is actually the state of Israel today.
How does it affect all Israel?
Well, as I said, the reason, the main reason that it's so difficult at the moment to find a peaceful solution to the conflict between Jews and Palestinians, Israelis and Palestinians, is the existence of the settlement and the settlers' fierce belief and insistence on staying in this region. So that's one example of how it affects Israel. If there were no settlements, it's very likely that there would be a Palestinian state, that there would not be occupation of the Palestinian people, that there would be less violence. It's just one example.
Now tell me, you write a novel which is very ironic with the whole picture of the world, because your treatment is ironic, but at the same time very compassive. You don't let us get to think about any character of yours. He is the bad guy, because when I want to do that, and that's even in the very beginning of the book, when for the first time Otniel appears, he drives in a car and he has this long beard. He goes to claim a land that's not his, and he has all these stickers on his car identifying him as the illegal settler. But at the same moment, there is this baby crying in the car because a snack fell down and Otniel can't help. So when you draw the picture that is ironic, at the same time you let the maybe empathy to convince us to look maybe behind this poster of Otniel, this sticker of Otniel. And that's what you do constantly, switching perspective, basically. Irony, empathy. And that leads us also to maybe empathize with people who really do bad things in the novel, because there are bad things happening, even if it's not murders and stuff. But what I wanted to ask is, you build up a novel that is in a way compassive with the settlers, and I know I'm asking something that you have been asked before. You build that, but at the same time you disagree with the whole movement. Why not to put it inside the novel, like more visibly? Because you wrote an article as well,
I think,
for Washington Post that is opposing the settlers and saying just what you said now, that if there were no settlers' movement, there might be a way to peace, which I think you long for.
Yeah, so I think the answer to your question, why did I not put my political opinion in the book? Why did I show this empathy to the characters, or create an empathy in the reader towards the characters, which I personally, in my personal opinion, political opinion, oppose what they are doing? I think you gave the answer when you described what you described, because people are not, they are not in real life, there is not bad guy and good guy. In real life, everyone is a little bad and a little good, and even a person who is involved in crimes, say, could have a little boy in the back of the car asking for his snack. And it's I think it's easy to portray a very black and white picture, but life is not like that, and I think literature is exactly our way of learning and seeing the complexities in people, and seeing that you can identify and even like a character that then it turns out, has done or is going to do horrible things. I mean, just to balance maybe the politics, I mean, in this book, it's settlers, even settlers who are violent, that you can then get to really like them because of the way they, you know, they behave on a day-to-day basis. But in another book of mine called Croc Attack, that hopefully will be published in Czech also in future, there are Palestinian suicide bombers. There is one character who narrates the story who's actually a member of a terrorist cell, a terrorist Palestinian cell. And it's also actually the character, I think, that as a person is the nicest character in the novel. You like him because you hear about his childhood, you hear about his love life, you hear about his fears, and you get to know him, and I think I want to do that. I want the reader to then say, wait a minute, he's doing the most horrible things, he's planning murders. But actually, I like the guy. So how can it exist? I like to do it as a writer, and I think because this is reality.
Has the novel Hilltop arrived to the settlement where you were studying? Have the settlers read it? What did they say? Or do you have readers in West Bank?
Yes, I had a couple of events. I'll just go back a second because I remember that I didn't answer all your other questions about why my opinion is not there, because I feel as I have other platforms like the Washington Post article, story, opinion. I have other platforms to present my views. But a novel for me is not a place for politics, although it's of course a political subject.
Is it not? We just said that you it's been called the best political novel.
Well, I would not
call
it, because it's about a political setup, but I would not call it political because it doesn't say I agree with them and I don't agree with them. But going back to the next question, remind me what it was.
The one with the readers in settlements?
Oh, yes, yes. So I, about a year and a half after the book was published, I got a phone call one day, and the guy said he was from Tkoa Dalet, which is the place that I told about, that it was the inspiration. And he said, and I said, okay. And he said, we wanted to invite you for a book event to talk about the book. And I got a bit worried. I got a bit nervous. And I asked him, what do you want to talk about? And I was afraid that they were, you know, pissed off with me, or they wanted to tell me that I got it wrong. But actually, we talked on the phone, and I was reassured that they were really interested to know about the process of the novel. They were proud to be inspiring in that way, that they inspired the novel. And
how did
I went
find
there.
It?
I went with a friend. I took a friend with me for backup in case something goes wrong, and it was one of the nicest, you know, book events that I had. There were some criticisms. There were people who said I started reading and it's exactly what I expected from a lefty from Tel Aviv. But other people answered her and say, no, you're wrong. He's giving here the full picture, and he gives the book, you know, gives the settler side like it was never done before. Actually, to be accurate, there were a couple of books about settlements, but they were very one-sided, written by settlers. But what the people here liked, that it was actually an outsider, and even someone who does not believe in the settlements, who gave a really full picture and seeing the settlers as human beings. And this was also some of the reviews, even on the right-wing newspapers, that appreciated it, together with, you know, understanding that it was critical of the governments, of the situation, of the whole setup that allows this movement to exist. But it was a nice evening. And then later, last few months ago, I was invited again by a group of women who read it in English in a settlement called Efrat, which is really a suburb of Jerusalem. And it's a very Anglo-Saxon place. It's about 50% Americans, English, South Africans, English speakers. So it was a group of about 20 ladies, mostly American settlers. Although they looked, for them, this was almost as foreign as it is for me in Tel Aviv. Because it's a very, as I said, it's very diverse. It's a very different type of settlement. And again, it was a very pleasant evening. They really liked the book. They connected it to it, again, on a human level. They had one criticism, which is there is a chapter in the book that describes the Saturday, the Shabbat. And everyone who's been to Israel, especially around Jerusalem, on Friday afternoon, there's a point where everything becomes quiet in preparation for the Shabbat. Because the Jewish religion doesn't allow people to drive or to use electricity or to work machines or to work at all. So it becomes suddenly very quiet. There's this very quiet atmosphere. And I describe it in the book. But what these women told me was, where is the lachatz? The lachatz is the pressure before it comes, because they have to cook everything and they have to prepare everything, because at some point they're not allowed to do anything. So that was a very good point, and I took it as a note for myself. And if I ever write again about religious Jews, I will definitely need women readers, because they have other perspectives that I will not catch myself.
Sorry to ask, but do you not mind that the settlers like your book and stay in their movement or in their actions?
I actually, it's a good question, because I do mind a bit. I did mind. I didn't want it to seem, and I don't want to give the impression that it's a pro-settler book. And of course, as a person who opposes it politically, definitely I didn't want this impression to be given. When I was very early on just thinking about writing it, I was talking to a friend and he told me, don't do it, you'll never get out of it. Everyone will hate you. I mean, even if they will like it, it will be a problem. If they will like it too much, it means that there's a problem on the other side. It's a very fine line that I had to walk through. And if it would be that all the settlers and all the right-wingers love the book, then I will know that I did something wrong. But it wasn't the case, because the book was liked in Haaretz that the ambassador quoted earlier, which is the most left-wing newspaper. And actually there were three different reviews of the book in Haaretz, all of them very positive. And in Makor Rishon, which is a right-wing newspaper, there was also positive reviews. And I think maybe the best example is the Bernstein Prize that you mentioned. It was the committee, the jury of the prize, were three literature professors. Two of them were your stereotypical literature professors, lefties from Tel Aviv and Haifa. But the third one was a very, very right-wing professor from Bar Ilan University, which is a religious, mostly religious, right-wing university near Tel Aviv. And he himself is known to be almost crazy right-wing settler. And the fact that the three of them got together and decided to give the prize to a book that is about such a political subject, even if it's not a political book, but it is obviously about the settlers, which is a very controversial issue. For me, it shows that it wasn't that you know, it could cross the lines. It could speak to both people on the right and the left. There were people, you know, on the right and on the left who didn't like it, but there were enough in the middle on both sides that really embraced it.
The novel tells us little stories and bigger stories of characters at the hilltop in Male Hermesi. A lot of characters, a lot of stories, different, all of them. But there are two protagonists of the novel. There are two brothers, orphans, Gabi Nehushtan, which we already mentioned, and his brother. And these persons are somehow, one of them, Gabi, seems to me like an exile in faith, which he finds because he has problems. We might talk about them. And the other one is an exile because of financial problems of other type. Where did those two persons come up? Where did the characters come up?
I think they are, in a way, they're very different from each other. Not only in the type of exile that you described, but they are brothers. One, Roni, is this kind of macho, Israeli, arrogant guy who's always very successful as a kid, playing basketball, and then in the army he goes to the best unit in the kibbutz. He's in the best, the most kind of famous field, which is the cows, being the cowboy. And then in business, he goes to Tel Aviv and does well, but there's always a kind of sense of danger, that you don't know where he could eventually fall, and eventually it happens. He also goes to America and initially does very well. I think there is something very Israeli about that, about this sense of nerve, the nerve to dare, to do whatever you want, to feel that you're entitled. But sometimes there are dangers to kind of fall off the cliff of the mountain. And then Gabi is the opposite of that, but for me, also very Israeli. There are two Israeli characters that are very different from each other, and both very Israeli. And Gabi is shy, is an introvert, is not a leader, but he's being led. He does things because he's kind of led to that way. And he's very... We talked before about characters that you really like, but then suddenly you realize that they're not as pleasant as you thought. Gabi has a very dark side. He has a violent side. And again, for me, this is something that is always kind of hovering on the edge in Israel, this violence. You know, I did talks in America with this book, and people told me, what are you talking about? Israel is not as violent as America, but, you know, they don't have these mass shootings that they have every month in America, that someone takes a gun and kills 20 people. That's true, but there is something very violent in society which is related to the conflict and related to our history. And I think through the characters, especially in the case of violence, Gabi's character, you get a sense of that. You get a sense of this duality of keeping a day-to-day life, a nice face, a pleasant character, but something is waiting to happen for both characters. And another point I would like to make here is that they are not settlers by birth. They grew up in a kibbutz. And it was easier for me to have main characters like that because I myself, as I said in the beginning, I am not a settler. I wasn't born religious. And it's like agents, outsiders like myself, going into this world and learning about this world. And there are agents not only for myself, but also for the readers. Because readers here in the Czech Republic or in Tel Aviv or in America or in Germany, they also wouldn't know this world and they will need someone to show them in. So that's another reason why I had these kind of two outsider characters.
Which seek for an exile. I just wanted to ask one more question. But I would like to say as well, if anybody feels like asking, prepare yourself, so because you can. We have another microphone, and we will be glad if you have any questions for Asaf Gavron. I just wanted to ask, I mentioned the word exile, so you have two characters that are from outside, somehow get to the exile of the settlement. At the same time, the book, even from the beginning, which you read here, leads us to think about Bible and its motives and Genesis, and it's ironical, but at the same time brings the topic of being a settler and building up the world in a way, building up a society in a way. Is that an exile? Did you find people who want to live in a world that is easy, somehow understandable? It is like, I have the claim, I have the right to claim this world, and I build up the world according to something that is very old, that is even biblical, and I have the right, and that's maybe an easy world to live a life. Have you found this in the settlements? Is that something that interested you?
I think it's a good point, and it's a very big topic. I mean, the whole idea of religion is simplification, isn't it? There is someone else. There is someone who's in charge of everything. He created everything, and he tells us to do this and that. There's nothing we can do. That's simplifying, and of course, people all over the world, all over history, have needed these simplifications in order to make sense of the world, in order to explain bad things or sad things, death, tragedies, whatever. There is some force, and it doesn't have to be religion or a specific religion. It's all kinds of systems of simplification. But there is, I think, in the Jewish religion and also specifically in the settler world, there is this sense of we live in this war zone, and it's very easy to say, okay, there are bad guys, there are good guys, we are the good guys, this is ours, there is a God, he promised it to us, and we are going to do what he says. For me, it's a very easy solution. For me, it doesn't really work like that. But yes, I did have this in mind, and I agree, and the beginning of the book that you've read from, this prologue is written in biblical language, and later it changes in the book, but it also comes back a little bit. There is something biblical in this scenery also, and in the idea that this place is you know, we're creating something from the start. It's like Genesis. Bereshit bara Elohim. I don't know how you say it in English or in Czech. God created the earth, so now we start building here something, and it's easy to think that way, as if there's no history, there's no other people, there's no other considerations. We just have the stones here and the land here, and we're building something. I think that there's definitely something in that that the book reflects.
Do you say that the simplification doesn't lead to a solution? I would just like to ask you, do you have a solution? I'm asking because you're one of the creators, the chief writer of a computer game, a video game called The Peacemaker, where you can play either the Prime Minister of Israel or the President of Palestine, and the goal is to get to a peace agreement. So what is the solution? How you get there in the game?
Okay, so yeah, I mean, first I'll say something. Yeah, the simplification is actually, it gives a solution, but then it has to clash with reality, and then it stops. Peacemaker was a game that was published already 12 years ago, I think. It was made by an American group of first students, and then they started a company. Which I knew one of them, and he brought me on to write the texts. The idea was to achieve peace. That was the goal. And as you say, you could play as either the Israeli Prime Minister or the Palestinian President, and you had to find your way through the different pressure groups, your voters, the other side, the terrorists, the Americans, the Europeans, the courts, and it's basically being in the shoes of someone who then needs to deal with all these different, very complex pressures from the Arab world I didn't mention. Now, It's in a sense, I enjoyed working on it because it's like the novels, you know. It shows the complexity. We talked about it before. The life isn't black and white. Life is not simple, not simplified. So
the computer game has an end.
The game allows
and an aim.
The game allows you. Now, yes, to get to your to answer your question, there is a way to win the game. I personally never managed to do it, to win. I never managed to win. The idea was to win it, and then you get the Nobel Prize for Peace. But then actually there was a story with the Nobel Committee, they didn't allow to use the brand of the Nobel. So now in the game, if you win it, you don't win the Nobel, but you achieve peace in the Middle East, which is not bad in itself. When the game came out, a reporter from TV took it to politicians in the Knesset, in the parliament, and a guy played it, and he, after about half a minute, he lost the game. I mean, everything he did, it was just completely wrong. And he says, what is this? This, you know,
it's too complicated. What?
It's too complicated for me. But that shows you, I think, it says more about the politician than it says about the game.
But the ending is an agreement between
yeah,
the two guys and the two states.
Yeah, it's a two-state solution.